Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, and we have what I would call a fantastic episode for you today. I got to speak to somebody I've been wanting to speak to for a long time, and it was a lot of fun, and I think it's going to be really, really insightful for you as well. So without further ado, let's get into it. My guest today is a product creator, affiliate marketer, and an entrepreneur. Back in 2014, after quitting his corporate job, him and his business partner were running a digital agency when they realized something important. They realized they just didn't like working with clients. So taking what they learned from their own projects and seeing what has worked for clients, they began a two-year process of building niche sites to replace their client income. Their goal was to build a portfolio company that owned upwards of 100 websites, which you'll learn in this interview, didn't quite turn out that way. During this time, they also decided to begin documenting what they were learning. So they started Authority Hacker. It's a website and now a podcast showing others how to build profitable websites. Most recently, the Authority Hacker team spent 18 months building a site in the software review space. And after scaling the site to $15,000 a month in affiliate revenue, they sold the website for a mid six figures. Now, let's hack. Mark Webster. Now, just before we get into the episode, I want to introduce you to Shippo, your business's new secret weapon. Shippo is the only shipping software for growing businesses that you can start today, set up in minutes, and then ship today. Because they ship hundreds of millions of packages, Shippo's volume discounts save you up to 90% off carrier rates. Simply connect your online store to Shippo. No coding, nor no technical expertise required. They will instantly identify the lowest shipping rates from 55 plus top global carriers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, and DHL. Your orders are automatically pulled in and ready to go. Just click print and ship. Plus, automated return labels are free. You only pay if your customers use them. Companies that use Shippo save thousands of dollars. They free up hours of valuable time and, on average, grow 77% year over year. Join over 100,000 companies who are saving up to 90% off carrier rates with Shippo. For our listeners, we're offering their best discount available anywhere. Get a shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/hack. That's up to a $700 value for free at goshippo.com/hack. Go right now. Get your shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/hack. Right now, the world is changing and businesses are adapting in different ways. So in these uncertain times, how do you make sure your marketing gets the results you need? LinkedIn can help you reach people who are looking for opportunities to help their businesses and can focus your campaigns on the objectives for today, so your marketing works better. With over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn, you're able to connect with the right business leaders, people who are there to learn how to be more effective at their jobs and find products to help their companies. 71% of people said they use the information they find on LinkedIn to inform their business decisions. And with LinkedIn ads, you can make sure your messages are getting through to these relevant people. LinkedIn has the targeting tools that can help you focus on reaching your precise audience, down to their job title, company name, location, and more. In fact, you can reach people you already know based on who has visited your site or simply anyone you've contacted in the past. LinkedIn ads can help all types of businesses get the marketing results they need today. See how LinkedIn can help you with a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Visit linkedin.com/hack. linkedin.com/hack. Some terms and conditions apply. So try it for yourself. LinkedIn is offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/hack. we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Johnny. Good to be here.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure, man. Yeah, I've actually wanted you on the show for quite some time, so I'm glad we got to make this work. So yeah, how about we just start at the top here?
Let's do it.
We have lots of things we can talk about, but let's start with you, Mark, as the entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what's the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Ooh, good question. I would probably say empathy. I have a real sort of desire to put myself in other people's shoes. I like understanding how people think, what makes them tick, how they make decisions. I was always that annoying kid that would ask his parents, you know, why does this work? How does this work? I wanted to understand how the world worked. And I think that as an entrepreneur, we're essentially problem solvers and we need to understand how people feel about those problems, how they react to our solutions in order to do our job, essentially. I say that this is probably the one thing, you know, is the biggest contributor to my success that I think about. But as an entrepreneur, you know this, you have to be a real jack of all trades. It's not just like, if you have a lot of empathy, you're going to be a good entrepreneur. You need to be like really good at a whole manner of different skills. So yeah, that's what I would probably say.
But this idea of empathy, you don't mean it like in a superficial sense where you have to understand them to be able to market to them and sell them stuff that they don't need.
No, I mean, I genuinely give a shit about what people are thinking and what they're doing. And I have a strong desire to help them. And yes, you know, there's a business angle in there because I want to start a business. I want to make things that I can sell to people and I need to understand them to do that. But at the same time, I'm just fascinated with how stuff works and why people make decisions and all this kind of stuff.
Right. So it is just generally just giving a shit what people think and want and need and their desires. Does this get harder or is this basis of empathy? So like Authority Hacker, you teach people how to build like authority sites within all different kinds of markets. And I know that you do sort of different tiers. So you have like very beginners and then more advanced people. You guys have been doing it for years and years with some great successes. Does this empathy help you still be able to create content that resonates with somebody who's completely new to all of this?
I hope so. Because at one point I was completely new to this. And I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like I would have probably gotten into online marketing about 5 or 6 years before I did, were it not for the fact that every blog, every website, every product that I looked for in the industry that kind of sold the dream, pictures of Ferraris and all that kind of stuff on their sales pages, I just found it so off-putting and so cheesy. And it felt like online marketing had to be fake, because this was the image that these kind of people had conjured up in my mind. So it took me a lot longer before I actually met some people who were working in this space and like, oh no, actually it's legit. You can genuinely like start a website and make money off of it. So I put myself in the position of myself starting this and thinking, well, what put me off getting into this? And Authority Hacker, I mean, part of our branding, part of our strategy is to kind of like stay away from that guru-esque side of things for the most part. So hopefully we're doing a good job of that, but I can't be 100% sure.
Well, I think there's going to always be the detractors who just think anybody teaching something online is obviously just a guru trying to sell you stuff. And if they were that good, they would be doing it themselves. But obviously you guys are doing it yourselves. As
sure,
well.
Yeah.
And there's a huge value. I mean, there's a reason why teachers and professors and trainers exist, because people like to learn things from other people who have done it. So it seems like you guys have done that right. But especially in this space, I agree that the Ferraris and the on the beach lifestyle and being able to live wherever you want, unfortunately, there's a side to that that is true as well. But it's typically not the Ferraris.
Yeah, I don't know too many people who drive Ferraris. I've read something somewhere, it was like 60% of Ferrari owners are actually have a negative net worth because they like borrow money to drive it or something like that. It's the type of car you buy unless you're a mega sports car enthusiast. It's the type of car you buy to like show your wealth. But I mean, I drive a secondhand used Volkswagen Golf, so I don't really know too much about that. But yeah.
Well, the last car I sold was a used Passat, and now we don't even have a car. So it's the exact opposite of a Ferrari, I guess. We're selling the dream, if you will.
Yeah.
So Authority Hacker was started when?
So we started Authority Hacker in 2014. At the time, my co-founder and I, we were actually running an agency, so a digital marketing agency we'd been running for about 4 years at that point. And to be honest with you, we didn't really like working with clients. And we were building other people's businesses. We were helping them grow. We had one client who actually fired us because they got too many new leads and they couldn't handle them. And so that was kind of the straw that the camel's back. We were like, okay, we've got to build our own thing, build our own asset, build a business, grow it. And yeah, we started 2014. We'd started dabbling with authority sites maybe 6-12 months prior to starting Authority Hacker. And really, it was just Authority Hacker was just a place for us to document our processes and our knowledge and just share cool ideas and growth hacks with other people. And yeah, a few people seemed to like it. So we kind of grew it from there.
How long did the transition from clients to zero clients take?
I would say it was about 2 years. So I think we started an authority site in the health space in 2013. We started Authority Hacker in 2014, and by January 2015, we had sold our agency business. I say sold. We didn't get very much for it, but we just kind of offloaded what was left of the burning rubble at that point.
So about 2 years, and what was your like philosophy, or not philosophy, but like what was your game plan with these authority sites at the very beginning? Like, was it to build it and sell it once it hits a certain mark, or was it to just build up enough recurring revenue monthly?
No, it's a good question. We never really thought of selling our sites. In the beginning, we wanted to become a portfolio company because we figured out how to do SEO, how to create content, how to put these relatively okay, or at least what we thought was okay sites at the time, together. And so it was never really a case of us having an end vision for where we wanted to go with that. We were just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and like seeing what would stick, seeing what we enjoyed. We knew what we didn't want to do, and that was working with clients. So I would say we were really moving away from that and just trying to build a business that we could kind of live off of, hopefully make a bit of money. And honestly, something that was enjoyable that we loved doing, because the last two and a half years of running an agency, we just did not enjoy it. It reminded me very much of having a corporate job, in fact.
And it just wasn't the way you wanted to go.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, we had maybe some ideas of how it would go. Those have definitely changed over time. We thought, oh, we'll build this up. We'll have 100 websites. And anyone who has even tried to get anywhere near 100 websites knows how much of a nightmare that must be. So we're very much in the focus mode at the moment, working pretty hard on Authority Hacker itself.
Okay. And so that was like 6 years ago at this point.
Yeah. 2014, wow. We started.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but authority sites back in 2014, 2015, they didn't sell like for the valuations that they do today.
Sure. Authority sites as a term, I mean, a few people were using it, but it wasn't really a sort of commonly understood term. People would call it niche sites or niche sites. And what do you say in Canada? And
I think we say niche sites.
Niche.
Yeah. I go back and forth between the two because I'm never sure what's right.
See, my business partner, he's French, so we're always on the niche side. So I'm going to call it that for the rest of the show. So apologies to my friends across the pond. But the valuations back then, I mean, I honestly have no idea. We didn't even look at it. We never sort of crossed our radar. It was only really so 2015 when brokers like Empire Flippers and FE International really started growing and sort of showing people outside this SEO online marketing space that, hey, there are real businesses that make a lot of money that you can invest in, and for relatively, okay, there was some risk, but for relatively low amount of money for relatively high amount of return. And those valuations over the last three, four years have just shot up to the point where a relatively okay, kind of average successful site can generate an absolute life-changing amount of money for someone. And it's not like a tech startup where you have a sort of one in a thousand chance of making it. You have a pretty decent chance if you keep working at an authority site to get to that point where it can generate you either money that you can live off of or sell it for a life-changing amount of money.
So starting then, so you had the agency, you moved into Authority Hacker and building up your own portfolio of sites that was going to be 100 sites at one point. You've now realized that's not feasible, which I think most people would agree.
Yeah.
But what now in 2020, Mark, what does your team look like around your portfolio and also around Authority Hacker?
So over the last, I'd say 18 months or so, we have really started to double down on authorityhacker.com itself. We sold a website last year in 2019. We weren't really sure if we were going to sell it. We started 18 months prior and we sold it for a sort of mid six figure amount. And the fact that we were able to do that, I mean, we got quite lucky in a few things there, but the fact that we were able to do it in such a short space of time helped us. So showed us, well, this is going to be an amazing case study. How about we use it? And we use it to serve Authority Hacker. We have this great case study. Hey, look what we did. Here's how we did it. Do you want to learn how to do it too? Kind of thing. At the time, we've always been pulled both ways. So do we focus on making really good content on Authority Hacker or do we focus on making these other authority sites and learning how to do new stuff? And there's never a kind of it's very difficult to find a kind of happy medium between the two because there's kind of different incentives pulling you at both ends. So our focus has really been over the last 18 months or so on making Authority Hacker as good as possible. I've been looking at my friends' businesses, other entrepreneurs, people I'm in some masterminds with who are maybe 5 or 10 times higher than where we are sort of revenue-wise. I'm looking at like, what do all these people have in common? And almost universally, they have a singular focus on doing one thing very, very well. And so that's kind of the direction. We haven't gone 100% that way, but that's kind of the direction we've gone more with Authority Hacker over the last 18 months. In terms of our team, so in our agency business, we actually had about 30 people working for us in one office at one point. And to me, the number of staff you have is just a vanity metric. It doesn't really matter. What we learned from that is that we don't like having a big team. Our goal here is not to have, hundreds of people working for us or anything like that. It's to have as few people working for us as possible, but we want those people to be really, really good. So we've spent a long time developing our hiring and our recruitment processes. We're very, very structured in the way we communicate with our team. We organize work. We're completely virtual, completely remote. We actually tried to open an office again 3 and a half years ago. It lasted 4 weeks before we forgot how bad it was and we realized that this was a big mistake. We shouldn't do this. So we gave it away and we went back to being fully remote. And we made a podcast about it as well to remind ourselves how bad it is having an office so that next time when we had that idea, we would re-listen to that and we wouldn't make that mistake again.
So analyzing people like that you know and that you might be in masterminds with and yep. How they are 10 times doing what you're doing, but they're focused on this singular focus. What is now this singular focus of Authority Hacker?
To make really, really good content and training. So we had launched a couple of training courses in 2015 time. And in our industry especially, things change very, very quickly. Be that the tools people use to do their SEO, to analyze things, the way you build a website, the way you build links, all that kind of stuff. It changes month to month. So the content we outputted in 2015, 16, 17, it started to get out of date pretty quickly. And so we ended up having this website, having these courses that we're kind of like not super happy with. So we really made a focus to really made a point to go back and update all of that with everything we'd learned, just really make it as good as possible. And there are many people out there who have training courses or who have podcast content, that kind of thing. But if you spread yourself too thin and try and do too many things and run a software company and do all this other thing at the same time, then it can be a little bit challenging to compete with the people who have a singular focus to make really, really, really good training, which is kind of what we're doing at the moment.
And your trainings have like a community base around them.
Yeah. So we have like some Facebook groups for each course, and we're in there. We have thousands of members in each one. And we just try and kind of foster that as much as possible. It's free. People get lifetime access. There's no kind of fees or anything like that. And we really go out of our way to help people in the community, I think, and make it as make the experience as good as possible. I don't want to sound like I'm kind of like selling it here or something, but I think it's really important to kind of like give your customers a really good experience. I read this really good book called Never Lose a Customer Again by a guy called Joey Coleman. And that really changed my thinking. And I think a lot of organizations at any level, they have a big focus on sales and getting people through the door. Then they have this other department called support or whatever that deals with people after that. And they're not really joined up in much of a way. But we felt that in this book, I learned that that's actually like the wrong approach. And we put much bigger focus on customer support, customer experience, the journey that people go through and what happens after they buy. So I think the community that we have plays a big part in that. We looked at our data once and we found that of everyone who is refunding our courses, 93% did not join our community, which tells us that if people join our community, they have a much lower chance of refunding because they're likely to be happier. So we put a lot of emphasis on getting people to join, getting people to engage, and you know, getting other members to engage with each other in that community as well. We've done live events for around conferences where we rent out a bar and get everyone drunk in around some SEO conferences. We're doing like t-shirts and all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah, community is super important.
So from a business perspective, like working with clients, you were yep. had an agency, you didn't like it. You wanted to create your own authority sites. You did that for several years with, and then had like a fairly huge success, like mid six figures to sell one after 18 months, which seems like, it almost seems like you hit your groove and you figured out what to do. But now you've decided, let's do something else. Let's moke our focus over onto info products, which is kind of seems like a hybrid. Like you have to run a community, right? So it's kind of like working with clients and kind of like not, because you have to be there for them all the time and nourish them.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I never really thought about it like that. I mean, to be fair, we had been selling info products throughout this time, or throughout most of this time from about 2015, 16 onwards. So it's not like we just started something new. It was just we had, I guess, multiple businesses here and we were just decided, okay, let's focus on doing this one. I actually quite enjoy it working with, not working with clients, but working with customers in that way, because there's less emphasis on, you don't have to. So the people that buy our courses, they tend to be relatively well educated around what they're doing. It's not like some of our SEO clients back in the day who you had to convince them it was a good idea to A/B test a pop-up on their site rather than just go with the one that their gut instinct decided. So I feel like there's less kind of barriers to the kind of fun, creative stuff that we want to do in our community, because we've kind of, I guess, pre-filtered people in some way that they kind of, their thinking is somewhat at least aligned with ours.
So you've just decided, because these other people you like have been sort of looking to as mentors sort of is like, they have that one sole focus. You've decided to, rather than focus on a couple different things, you're going to just focus on this side of it.
I would say yes, but we're still not 100% there yet. We're still running other sites. We're actually starting another one as like a case study project very soon. So it's kind of like this kind of eternal tug of war in your mind that's like pulling you in different directions. I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs can kind of relate to that. And I'll be honest with you, it's tough. Like we definitely go through phases where we're like, oh yeah, this is definitely the right decision. We're doing the right thing here. And then something will happen. And the next week we're like, oh, we should just start a bunch of other sites and do this other thing. And then, oh no, but this course is going to do really well. Let's do this. So you probably don't see it from a public perspective, but the path we're going on, it's not just, okay, we're going to have this sole focus and just do that. It's kind of a zigzagging along the way.
Okay, nice. I appreciate that. my business is sort of the same way. So that makes me feel better, Mark.
I think most entrepreneurs can relate to that. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So since you have all of this experience, can I sort of like just pick your brain a bit about like building and selling info products?
Of course. Yeah.
Just to see how we can, I mean, right now, the COVID, right? It's and online courses, online trainings is massive. It's just exploding. The things that people want to learn and the things that people are teaching, it's like this whole, it's the thing that I think people talked about for years. They thought was going to happen. It just happened to happen really, really suddenly because of all of this. So from your perspective, somebody is listening to this and they are intrigued by the idea of an info product because they've heard about it 1,000 times everywhere. They probably bought some. What do you think you need first? Like, do you need an audience or do you need a product idea?
That is the eternal question. We've done podcasts in the past on one titled Product Comes First, and I think another titled Make Sure You Don't Launch Without an Audience or something like that. So honestly, you can do it either way, right? A good friend of mine has a photography course. I asked him this question once and he said that if he was doing it again, he would build a product first and then invest heavily in Facebook ads and paid traffic and kind of grow it that way and then build out his organic audience after that. If I was doing it, I would do it the other way around. I would build the audience first and then launch the product, because you're always kind of risking not building the correct product. You kind of really get a feel for your audience when you're chatting with them and interacting with them and they're coming and you're consuming your free content. And that's the model that we use to develop the Authority Hacker products. And I feel that's safer, though, if you're kind of going full ham and just wanna like grow as fast as possible, then probably the product comes first approach would be higher risk but higher reward.
But then how do you know what to build, right? You just have to trust your gut that you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the eternal question as an entrepreneur as well. Do you follow the data or do you trust your gut? And the truth is you can never just do one of those. There's always kind of a bit of both involved in your thinking, and balancing that out is a constant challenge, which I regularly fail at. So I honestly don't have an exact answer for that. There are certain processes that you can apply. So for example, you can pre-sell a course. So you can create, let's say, 4 different topic ideas, and then you can open up sales, maybe use some ads to drive traffic to that. And you can see whichever ones sell, you can refund those that don't, and then actually produce the ones that do. There are questions on the efficacy of that. But I know the guys over at Founder, they took that approach. Nathan Chan talked about that on his podcast and seems to have a lot of success with it. So you can kind of get some lead indicators of what's going to work. Another option would maybe be just to give away some free lead magnets. So some free maybe mini course or PDF or some kind of guide, run paid traffic to that. And then have a few different categories of that and see which one people were most interested in. And then that will probably give you at least a good idea of what kind of topic you should be creating an info product about. And the other way is just to look at what other people are doing. Generally, the info products, so certainly those that are around for a long period of time, tend to be ones that people are interested in, tend to be ones that sell. So you can kind of get a bit of an indicator from that as well.
I love it. I love it. Those are all excellent ideas. And I do love your answer for the very first question, which is like this one or this one. And you're like, it kind of either works, which is
I hate being that guy that just says all the time, you know, it depends. It depends. It's a common thing in SEO. People are like, what does Google think of this? And I was like, well, it depends. But I catch myself doing it. I feel like I have to clarify it further. So apologies for that.
I mean, really, it usually does depend. So there's not really a definitive answer. So I do appreciate it in that sense. But that's people just thinking about starting. If we're talking about taking, like, from what I've seen and with clients that I work with who sell courses, it typically you don't go from not having a course ever to selling hundreds of thousands of dollars in a course. I mean, people like to sell you that idea, but it typically that's not how I've seen it. I've seen what clients come to me and they're selling consistently, say $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month of their course, And they're not really sure how they're doing it, except they've found an audience that is really into it, but nothing is tweaked. Nothing. It's just people just, they happen to hit that people want this really, really badly. How would, like, what would be sort of first steps would you suggest, Mark, for somebody selling $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 in a course? What should they be focusing on to take that from 20 grand a year up to, say, 100?
So, I mean, I think the main thing here is don't try and go from 20 to 100 in, you know, overnight. It's a slow, kind of slow and steady organic process to get there. I would say break down what is working. Talk to your existing customers. Survey them. You know, one of the most important things you can do is ask them questions about what they bought, why they bought, what they thought they could be improved, how far they got through it. If you're using any kind of course platform, usually they have some analytics. You can dig into the data. Were there any modules which people focused in on or ignored? Look at the data, take stock of where you're at. And then my focus would be on just making the content as good as possible. So is there anything you can do to actually improve it or add more clarity or more features to your content? Maybe build some tools, some SOPs, some extra actionable stuff that actually gets people doing it rather than, you know, just learning about it from a PowerPoint, if possible. If you're not using video, I would 100% film everything. I think it's very important in 2020 and beyond. If you have any kind of course that's full video as much as possible. So once you have a solid idea of the product and the product is good, the next thing is to, most likely you're not making much money because your price is too cheap. Whenever someone launches a course, myself included, one of the things which certainly I'm most worried about is that I price it wrong or price it too high and people don't like it. They go, oh, this is not worth it. And they have a bad experience through that. So to be safe and to like not risk that happening, most people will underprice their product, usually quite significantly. And they'll think, oh, well, I've only have 40 videos in here. So that's only worth however many $100 or whatever. But the thing you need to look at in terms of value is what you're actually delivering to the customer. So where are you taking them from A to B? What result are they getting? Are you helping them to solve some major life issue? Are you helping them to lose weight or learn how to take fantastic photographs or something like that? Those things are very valuable to people. Even if you can't put a monetary number on it, like emotionally, it's very valuable and they will pay a good amount of money for you to help them solve it. So generally, when I talk to anyone who has a course, raise your price. That's probably the first thing. In fact, I know a consultant who basically gets paid six figures to go into companies and just tells them to raise their price and 99 times out of 100, it works. So I would say focus on that. Generally as well, course creators are not very good at doing sales pages and sales funnels, which are super important. Or if they are really, really good at that, sometimes then they're not actually very good at building the course itself. So there can be a bit of a mismatch there. As an entrepreneur, it's something you're going to have to learn. My business partner, we're not natural salespeople. We're not very comfortable kind of touting ourselves or kind of saying good things about ourselves, really. So it's a skill that you definitely have to learn and to pick up. Designing a good sales page that communicates the authenticity of what you're trying to do without sounding like some fake guru or whatever is challenging for sure. But usually people will go too far one way or the other, but I think there's some kind of happy medium in there that you can kind of establish. And then ultimately, if you have a good product, you have a good sales funnel, good sales page, then you have just to get more people in there. So that's through your paid traffic, through your ads, or through your organic traffic, through your podcast or your blog, YouTube channel, whatever else it is. It's a real simple formula, like the number of offers times the number of times the price times the number of people showing that offer times the conversion rate. So look at those four things and try and work on one at a time. And that's probably how you grind it out, but it is a grind and you rarely go from 4K a month to 400K a month overnight. It takes years. I mean, I'm not even close to that, but like it takes years to kind of grow it inorganically like that.
When you refer to a sales funnel for this info product, for this course, What are you talking like in like the basic 101 sense?
So a sales funnel is when the entire setup of getting people from someone who just consumes your content, someone in your audience, through to a customer. So like, what are the steps involved in that? The most common way this is set up would be you'd have your free blog content, and then you'd have some kind of lead magnet, which is free piece of content, which you offer to someone in exchange for them signing up to your email list and perhaps watching a webinar, perhaps just signing up for your email list maybe. And then you'll email them some details, some about your product, maybe some value emails in there, and then say, hey, you know, would you, if you want more, why not check out this sales page? And then there's a sales page, and that takes them through the journey of like what they can get out of it and what your product can solve for them. And it does get very complex sometimes. You know, there's tools like deadline funnels out there, which is something we use, where you can create sort of evergreen scarcity offers in a way. So, you know, everyone's seen these sales pages that say price reduced, the last offer, you know, expires in 6 minutes, and then the countdown timer that when you refresh the page magically goes back to 6 minutes. I question the effectiveness of those kind of tactics anymore, though what a tool like deadline funnels will allow you to do is do that in a more legitimate way. So you can say offer a new subscriber discount. So when someone signs up for your list and they reach a certain point, deadline funnels will trigger an actual genuine countdown timer where the price of your product is reduced for a period of time. And you know, the scarcity of that price reduction can help sell your product. But it is a genuine thing, because if someone logs in an incognito window or misses it, then the price really does go back up. So that's like another way of kind of looking at it. And there are many complex kind of deviations of this, but essentially a sales funnel is some complex piece of marketing which will work 24/7 and do the sales for you, hopefully without too much human interaction.
Right. So create good content or find a way to get people to your offer. Offer them something for free, like a lead magnet, to get them onto an email list, and then use that email list to actually offer them your product.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be specifically that way. I mean, if you have a podcast, it could be, you know, just getting people to come onto your podcast, because like a lot of, especially like a higher ticket product, two or three emails often not really enough to get people to part with $1,000 or whatever. They need to learn, know, and trust you. So a good way of doing that is watching your YouTube channel, listening to your podcast for a period of time, and really getting to know you. And once they trust you, it's a much easier purchase decision for them. So you have to kind of factor in that as well.
I love it. All right, Mark. Well, I appreciate you sharing so much with the listeners. I'd like to wrap up just on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. You are now interview 501 for me.
Wow. And congratulations.
Thanks. There seems to be this thing I've noticed, which is as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, as creators of things, we're always like projecting our own personal and like business success into the future. So in 3 months, when you sell that many number of courses, or in 6 months, when you sell another site for whatever number you're picturing, right before you hit that, you and I both know that you're just going to set a bigger, loftier goal into the future. And from the outside, you look successful. But from you, it's always, well, I will be. I will be when I reach the level that person's at. So I agree we have to look forward. But rather than looking forward, say for the next 2 minutes, 3 minutes, Mark, can you just turn around and look behind you at like this entire journey since you started? And just tell me, how do you feel about it up until this moment?
I remember when I quit my corporate job, I was doing a bit of traveling, trying to figure out this online marketing stuff. And there was a point when I was just looking at things and I thought, wouldn't it be really cool to be able to use Google Suite or Google Apps, I think it was called back then, to manage my email rather than Outlook? And wouldn't it be really cool to like have all these tools that I could just log into and get SEO data and stuff? And that was really my only goal at that early stage, is to make enough money to buy food the next month and play around with cool tools and have a bit of fun. It's interesting I guess, looking back at that, now that you mention it, it does kind of make me appreciate where I am a hell of a lot more. I think, especially at this time with everything going on in the world, it's very easy to get distracted and there's doom and gloom around everywhere. But yeah, it's I'd say I'm pretty so happy with like how things have turned out. I definitely, you were asking the question when you're saying about looking forward and never being, always comparing yourself to other people and never being 100% satisfied. I think that is almost in a way like the curse of being an entrepreneur. Like it will never, at least for me, it will never really fulfill your dreams because your dreams always keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But the fact that they're doing that is a good thing because it drives you onwards and leads you to take bigger risks and do more impressive things and solve bigger problems in the world, which is ultimately, you know, not to get all esoterical, but like good for humanity in a way.
I agree. And I love it. Great answer, man. Great answer. So throughout this, we've talked about your business sort of in passing, but you have an awesome podcast and website. Can you specifically tell people what those are, who they're for, and where to find them?
Sure. So our website's authorityhacker.com. We have a podcast, authorityhacker.com/podcast. We are there every week. And my business partner and I talk about all things to do with running an online business, specifically a website, from SEO, content creation, entrepreneurship, all our failures. And it's pretty sort of candid off the cuff. We're actually on YouTube. We started filming our podcast as well. We're at about 200 episodes, so hoping to reach the 501 at some point, though. I feel we'll always be a little bit behind you in that regard.
Awesome. So authorityhacker.com or authorityhacker.com/podcast will take you there. I'll link to all of that as well. Throughout the conversation, mentioned Empire Flippers. Like one guy from Empire Flippers has been on the show a couple times now, so I'll find links to him and then also FEI. You mentioned a book and you mentioned the mid six-figure sale case study that you did. I'm going to link to all those in the show notes so they're easy for you to find once you get around. It'll be over there on the site for you. Mark, once again, just thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome to watch.
Thanks. Appreciate it. And thanks for having me on. And again, congratulations, 500 episodes. That's a huge milestone.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that nearly as much as I did. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Head over there. You'll see Mark's episode up under the podcast on the site, and as well as 500 other episodes, which we're categorizing for you and making it easier for you to sort of dig through the depths and find the episodes that really sort of push you forward and be what you need when you need it. So look forward to that as well. And with all of that said, I hope you are staying safe and healthy and happy out there through all of this chaos that we're going through. It seems like things are slightly getting back to normal, at least up here in Toronto, but it changes day to day. but I wish thee well. If there's ever anything I can do for you, you can track me down. Email john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have or help you in any way that I possibly could. With all of that said, thank you so much for showing up, and I hope to see you next time. And until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.